down, but they won't let me.
All right. Hi, everybody. I know you probably tuned in to listen to the music, but I'm not going to waste any time because we're all wound up and ready to go tonight. Talking Fugitive with Kitty and Bobby on once again. Tonight is part two of Nightmare at North Oak, hopefully. At least that's what I've got down. What we're going to, tonight is also what I'm going to call the big contest. So I'll take just a minute. Those of you that are listening now, are going to be the ones that are eligible. During each half hour between now and 9 p.m. Pacific Coast time, we're going to give out a letter in an acronym. You keep track of the letters. It's an easy acronym to solve. We'll give one during each half hour segment, and between 8:30 and 9, we'll give a special email address for you to submit your answer, and we're going to be giving away a remote control CD DVD player. So hopefully something worthwhile, and it's going to be easy to win. And if nothing else, you enjoy some excellent programming. Now, I had a listener complaint that about this program was just too much of Bobby Neer running his mouth, and so I want you to know I pay attention to this, and that sounds a little harsh. We're going to take this the other way around. I should point out that the complaint was sent to me by Bobby Neer, so he obviously listens to his own show. So to give some balance to this, we will allow the co-moderator and co-host Kitty to start things off tonight. So if you please.
Okay, thanks. Okay, well, to start with, we're going to do something a little different. We're going to start with a couple of emails, and the first one that I'm going to read is from Helen, who resides in England, and she writes, I enjoyed part one of your show on Nightmare at North Oak. It has always been my favorite episode ever since I first saw The Fugitive in the early 90s. I love the suspense of the nightmares and the fact that after the second one, Kimball wakes up and Gerard is really there. When Gerard offers Kimball a cigarette and says, how you must hate me, in a resigned voice, I get the impression that under different circumstances, he would have liked to have had Kimball as a friend. In my opinion, all the actors are wonderful, right down to the two women fussing over Kimball and taking him gifts. They give the episode a nice comic touch, the way Wilma tries to ignore them, later on suggests that she knows them all too well. Regarding the end of the episode, I wonder what the legal position would have been when several people owned up to the crime of slipping Kimball the key to his cell. Would the real culprit have gotten away with it? And our next email is from Rob in Westchester. And he says, a few quick comments. This is one of my favorites, if not favorite, all-time episodes. It is amazing how daring the director was in opening with the nightmare and how clever he was in shooting it twice from different angles with different music instead of just showing the same scene twice. And it is just amazing at how well the characters of Kimball and Gerard are developed for only the 11th show of the series. The dialogue in the jail cell is one of the best 2 minutes of the series. Each actor uses facial expressions to show the nerve that has been struck by the other. Truly an amazing scene. The only drawback I have is the exchange between Kimball and the wife. While it is one of the best in the series, is that too much to ask, a life for a life? It also has Kimball feebly explaining his plight. My defense was a one-armed man, and he did it, not me. But all in all, just a terrific episode. And I have to kind of agree with Rob on this point, in that scene between Kimball and Wilma, because Wilma asks, you know, he does say that, is that too much to ask a life for a life? And it does seem kind of an odd thing to say from one standpoint. And the thing that always struck me about that scene was when Wilma said, was it a fair trial? And he says, yes, it was. But, of course, it really wasn't. Although we haven't actually seen the trial yet, so we really don't know that at this point. But it just kind of it just kind of doesn't work quite all the way, because he is just kind of making this plea instead of maybe working on a plan of escape. As far as what Helen said, in the part where Gerard says, "How you must hate me," and she says, "I get the impression that under different circumstances he would have liked Kimball and they would have been friends," I can see that as kind of a possibility. I would never rule it out. I mean, after all, they were both upstanding citizens in Stafford. So I don't see that would be impossible. The ending of the episode, this I always thought was just so classic, because this ending is just right out of Spartacus, and I just love it, because it makes me chuckle at the end every time I watch it. Because instead of it's "I'm Spartacus," it's "Who gave the key to Kimball?" And everybody is standing up saying, "I gave that key to Kimball." And she does bring up a good point. Would the real culprit have gotten away with it? And I'm inclined to think yes, in real life, that the real culprit probably would, because they wouldn't really know who actually did it, because it's very apparent that only one person could have given Kimball the key. And so what do you do? You know, you can't, you know, how can you convict everybody of giving someone one key? So I think the culprit would have definitely stood a good shot at getting away with it in real life. What do you think, Bobby?
Okay, thanks, Kitty. That was very good. I kind of like this new format. That was excellent. I'm going to have a much better time listening on Thursday than I normally do.
Okay.
There's a lot there to talk about. Let me just go back to the beginning about this being a feeble explanation by Kimball as to why he got convicted. I don't have a problem with that, because to tell you the truth, it is feeble. As a matter of fact, everything about it is feeble, because he simply says he didn't do it. He has no proof that he wasn't there. He has no witnesses. He wasn't with anybody else at the time of the murder. And even the prosecution has a feeble case. I mean, there's no evidence in any direction. So I can't really fault that he kind of just stands there and says, "I didn't do it, there was a one-armed man." It's basically the same explanation that he gives to Monica Wells in the pilot episode, when he stands there and he tells her about how, you know, he felt it was a fair trial, but, you know, the circumstances caused them to think that he did it. But, I mean, it's feeble because it just has to be, so I don't really have a problem with that, to be honest with you. Before I get into any of that, I want to mention a scene in the second half, just as the second half of the episode is beginning, that people rarely mention, probably because there's so many other things going on that are really stand out better, and that is that Gerard is invited to dinner over at the Springer household while Kimball is in jail, and he doesn't want to go at first, but the sheriff talks him into going, and this to me is not only Gerard at his very worst, but it says a lot about him. I mean, he goes over there to eat. He's sitting at the dinner table with Wilma Springer and the sheriff and their son, who was one of the kids saved in the bus. And he's sitting there, and what is he doing? He's stuffing his face with food, and he's telling them about all the times he almost called Kimball. "Well, I almost called him in the amusement park, and I almost called him there, and I almost called him." And it's obvious that everybody at the table is upset. It amazed me that the sheriff ever invited him over to begin with. I mean, they're all eating, but Wilma looks like she can barely get the food down. And their son is sitting right opposite Gerard, and he's already in tears because he feels like it's his fault that any of this happened. And he begins to cry, and Gerard just looks at him and has no feelings for him whatsoever. He simply continues on with the story, telling him that he shouldn't feel bad about, you know, turning him in the way he did by taking a picture of him, until the kid turns in and runs away from the table. And then afterwards, it's just Wilma Springer and Gerard sitting there. And this particular scene is important because probably the most famous line in the entire series comes during this scene. And it says everything about Gerard, if you wonder why he's so relentless, because Wilma says to him, she suggests to him, "But what if Kimball really didn't do it? What if he's telling the truth? What then?" And he just looks at her as like she's crazy, and he uses his most famous line, which is, "The law says he's guilty, I enforce the law." And that says everything about him. That's, you don't even have to wonder for the rest of the series why he's doing what he's doing. You know, back in season one, we ran a viewer poll on why people thought that Gerard is so obsessed this way. And most people, that was one of the choices. And that's what most people picked. I mean, it's obvious because he says that, that he truly believes that he's there just to arrest him and take him back, and that he cannot be bothered by any trivial things such as maybe he didn't do it. So I really, really like that scene, because if you want to hate Gerard, and let's face it, it's fun to hate him, that's one time when you can really hate his guts, because he's been invited to dinner, and he didn't have to sit there and do that. He tells Wilma Springer that she was right in telling her husband that it was Richard Kimball, and that she should tell her son that he did the right thing. And it's obvious that nobody wants to hear any of that. And this is one of those times when I just wanted to reach through the screen and strangle him, because this is truly totally obnoxious behavior. She mentions to him, but what about what happened here, the fact that he saved all the kids' lives? Will that make any difference? And he just matter-of-factly says, actually, no. No, it's not really good. I would think not, he says to her. It's not going to make any difference. What are you going to do? She says to him, and he says, well, I'm going to take him back, and we're going to go through the process, and he's going to get a new execution date, and I'm going to put him to death. I mean, it's so matter-of-fact that when you've seen that scene, then you get to know that there's virtually no hope at all that he's ever going to come around. Did it strike you that way, Kitty? That pretty much seals it, that there's really not much chance he's ever going to change his mind.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, you're right that it really basically says what Gerard is that Gerard is this person that's just got one goal in mind, and that's to catch Kimball, because as far as he's concerned, the jury already came back with the verdict, and the verdict was that he was guilty. And so his feeling is you don't investigate a crime after the conviction has come in, never mind the fact that maybe the jury was wrong and that maybe the evidence was wrong, you know, and it's like the, you know, and we learn here that he's not even interested in learning anything new about Kimball or the case or anything, you know, and such as we find in other episodes, as an episode that we just looked at not that long ago, where Gerard was not even interested in looking at new witnesses. And, you know, his basic thing is that the jury already found him guilty once, and that's that. You know, the appeals are over.
The funny thing about it is that, as obnoxious as he is in this series, he's the kind of police officer we probably would want in today's world, because we're always complaining about the criminal justice system and the fact that people are convicted and then they get due trials later and they play with the system and judges let people out when they shouldn't and before it's time to do it. You hear that on the news every day. It's absolutely relentless. So I think Gerard would do better in today's world than he did back then. We would probably admire him for being so hard about criminals and simply saying, look, you know, he was convicted of murder, and I don't want to hear about appeals. I don't want to hear about evidence. I don't want to hear about anything. Let's just go back to the beginning. There was enough evidence to convict him, and let's do what we have to do. You don't get that today, not in the world today. You know, there are a million different ways to get out of it and to get a new trial, and that can be very infuriating because they pretty much know that those people are guilty.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, and you have to ask yourself, if this were reality, would Kimball have even been convicted on the flimsy evidence that they had?
Yeah. Well, we'll be doing Girl from Little Egypt in a few weeks.
Yes, that's true.
And the trial, yeah, it's just, yeah. Okay. And so I don't really, it doesn't bother me that he has this lame explanation. Because to be honest with you, it is a lame explanation. If I had to explain that, if it was me, I would say, what would I say? What would I say is, look, I went out. I was angry. I rode around for a while. Kid saw me on the lake. He was fishing, but he didn't see me. And I wasn't with anybody. Nobody saw me. There was nobody in the street.
All right. Bob, I have a question. What were they having for dinner that night? No. We're going to say.
It looked like ham to me.
Yeah, okay. I tell you, you guys got it all. Listen, we got a couple of callers waiting. I'll tell you about them. We'll take a quick time out. We'll come back with the clue, the first clue for tonight's contest. So a lot to do when we continue to talk Fugitive on Retro Radio.
The best television on Tuesday night takes place on the radio. Talking Television with Dave White discusses anything and everything concerning television, past, present, and future. specially featured programs, interesting guests, favorite theme songs, nostalgic commercials, blended with listener phone calls and emails, make the 90 minutes from 7:30 through 9 p.m. Pacific Time a different and entertaining interlude. So make a point on Tuesday to stop watching television and start talking about watching television. 7:30 to 9 p.m. Pacific on KSAV, world-class radio on the World Wide Web.
I'd like to settle down, but they won't let me.
All right, we're back to talking Fugitive with Kitty and Bobby. For tonight's contest, to win the DVD player, the first letter in the five-letter acronym is the letter T. T like tango, T like Tom, T like talk, T like you drink, the letter T. So that's number one. Okay, on the line with us, who wants to do some talking, we've got Rob from Westchester. Rob, welcome to Talking Fugitive.
No, thanks. Good pleasure to be on. Hi, Bobby and Kitty.
Hi, Rob.
Finally put a voice with an email. I just wanted to just to kind of reiterate what I said. I wasn't sure if my email was going to be read, so I'll be brief since you already touched on it a little bit. But first of all, Bobby, just to clarify, that scene doesn't bother me, and I don't have any problem with Kimball's, you know, the feebleness of his situation. I just always thought it was kind of humorous because it's not as passionate as the Monica Wells speech.
Oh, yeah.
It's just kind of like a kid in school saying, "He did it, not me."
How true.
You know what I mean?
Okay. Yeah, I think he was mainly relying on the fact that the life for a life thing rather than that.
Yes. Yes, exactly. And that I thought worked very well. I thought that line was right to the point and kind of stops you in your tracks.
Yeah.
And you can just see how passionate he is about his situation and trying to get out of it. So, you know, that I agree with 100%. And then the other point that you mentioned about Gerard, I hadn't thought about that as much. That was very interesting. But Gerard really goes through a lot of different character traits during that episode. And, he, as typical, he just comes off in such a bad light and as, like, the public relations point of view. He invited himself to dinner to that, if you remember. He pretty much invited himself to dinner by saying he hadn't had a bite to eat in a long time.
Oh, that's true. He was hinting, yeah.
I'm having a little bit of a delay on the phone here, so I'm sorry if I'm kind of rambling. I can't hear what your reactions are right away.
Okay. Well, thanks for clarifying that for us.
Yeah, well, it's one of my, you know, it may be my favorite all-time episode, like a lot of people, and I'm glad that you're giving it a lot of airtime, and congratulations on a great program. I enjoy listening to it every time it's on.
Oh, thank you.
Take care.
Thanks. Okay, and I guess we also have Ken.
Yeah, it takes about a minute for him to get the call up on the board.
Okay.
So you go ahead, and then we'll bring Ken on in just a second.
Okay.
Well, I think that Rob makes a good point that Kimball is really relying there on the life for life thing. He's not, he doesn't even want to go into a whole discussion about the evidence or anything. He's simply calling her only, simply saying, "I saved your son's life. Save mine." And it's unusual because he doesn't normally do that. He saves countless lives, but he never expects anything in return. This time he does, and I can't say I blame him.
Yeah, that is true.
He has no other way out.
Yeah.
How else is he going to get out of there if she doesn't help him? There is no other way. He's in the sheriff's house.
Well, he did try to, didn't he try to get out through the window at one point?
He ran away, and the kids found him because he was still injured, and he passed out. And they thought they were doing him a big favor by bringing him back.
Said,
"Well, he saved us. Now we'll save him. We'll bring him back."
Yeah.
Okay. We've got Ken on here now. Are you ready for him now?
Yeah. Go ahead.
All right, Ken. Welcome back once again. Glad to have you here on KSAV.
Hi, Ken.
Hi, Kitty. Hi, Bob. Hey,
Howdy,
thanks,
Ken.
Dave.
Hi.
Can you hear me? Okay, Bob.
Yeah. We can hear you.
Yeah, I can hear you.
Good. I agree with Rob, and I agree with you guys. This episode is classic. It really is. And the reason is because of the tension and the anticipation in this one story. I remember the first time I saw it, I was kind of like on the edge of my seat, because after Kimball was captured and then Gerard came into town, I knew there was going to be a meeting. And did you notice the episode kind of teased us a little bit? They didn't get right into it right away. You're right. Kind of, you have to anticipate, it's coming. And then when the jail scene came, I was on the edge of my seat. Weren't you, Bob?
Yeah, that particular scene is an example of what I always say about drama. I'm no expert in it, but in my opinion, for all of the, especially today, for all of the special effects that you get in stories and cars crashing and things blowing up, and I mean, it's just remarkable. There isn't anything they can't do these days. You can discount all of that, because what really makes for great drama is that. You don't need any of that. All you need is a couple of prison bars and two characters, one on one side, one on the other, playing off of each other. That's it. Nothing beats that. I don't care. You know, you could blow up a whole city. It's not gonna even approach this kind of thing. You don't see much of that in movies and TV series today, because they have gone so far beyond that, and they're so interested in the visual aspect of it. But, you know, this scene also has some very good visual aspects, too. If you look at Kimball standing there by the bars, you can see the shadows of the bars playing across his face. And when he talks to Gerard, he's talking through, he clenches his teeth together, and he kind of spits the words out towards Gerard. Both of them are just fantastic in this scene.
Well, I mean, you know, and Bobby, let's not forget, too, you brought up that this was a good episode that shows Gerard's personality. We talked about him at dinner with the Springers, and how he's like, he's got this very stern facade, you know, that he's just enforcing the law because the law has found him guilty. But yet this scene also shows another aspect of Gerard, where you see this little moment of Gerard where Kimball says to him, "I think your nightmare is that after I'm dead, you actually will find that one-armed man who killed my wife." And it does rattle Gerard. And it's something that Gerard, you know, it's something that obviously you didn't think about it before this, but it's something that Gerard has been, it's in the, you now know that it's something that's in the back of Gerard's mind, at the very least.
You know what, Kitty? At the end of that scene there, you know, when Gerard walks away, Kimball leaves him with that one line. He says, "What are you running from, Gerard?" Now, I used to think to myself, that would have been an interesting thing to carry through the series the rest of the way. In other words, after Gerard hears that from Kimball in that episode, later on in another season or so, it might come back and prey upon his mind and think to himself, you know what, maybe he was right in saying that. I wonder what I am running from and why I am doing this. I used to think that way until the 2000 version of the series, as you and I both know and people familiar with the series, they did indeed go there and had Gerard have a specific reason why he was relentlessly pursuing one man who had gotten away. And it didn't work out very well. So I think my idea would probably not have been very good.
Well, it's because they went into overkill with
it. Yeah, right.
You know, I mean, but I think if they had just had it, you know, sparsely here and there with the Gerard, I think it would have worked much better.
Right.
You know, much like with the way how you see just the one, you just see the one-armed man here and there. It would have been interesting, you know, and we've talked about this before. It would have been interesting if we could have seen the character of Gerard develop just maybe one step further. You know, not dedicate an entire show to Gerard and his family and his trials and tribulations, but you know, just get a scene here and there in various episodes. So that you've got a more of an idea of what is it that makes this guy tick. And even Barry Morse himself, in the book that he had written, that was one of the things that he thought was too bad about the show, was that Gerard could not be developed just a little bit more.
Gerard is presented here as a little bit robotic. You know, you wind
exactly.
him up and Kimball.
Exactly.
Just wind him up and head him in that direction, and he takes off.
Exactly, because we're into the next season, and that's exactly what I'm starting to think of with Gerard, particularly in the most recent episode that we saw with Gerard. I mean, he's now gotten to the point where he's really, you know, he's not just the guy that you want to hate. To me, he's just kind of starting to, you know, to become, oh,
Well, I think you said in your review he was beginning to annoy you.
Yes, that's it. He's really starting to become more annoying than anything because he's just he doesn't even want to listen to anything that might clear Kimball.
Exactly.
You know, because he's just so into this, I am an instrument of the law, and therefore I follow the law, and the jury has already spoken, so, you know, everything's off the table.
And, of course,
it's not true, because people get appeals all the time, people get new trials, and convictions are overturned.
Can I? You're out there pumping the dimes in the slot. What do you think?
Oh, I agree with everything. I'm enjoying everybody's perspective of... You know, I think it was brilliant of the producers to make the Kimball-Girard meeting kind of a rare thing throughout the series because you don't know when it's going to happen again. And, you know, we saw it in Never Wave Goodbye, but it wasn't that dramatic there. But this was real drama. I agree, Bob. Also, let's not forget that Nancy Wickwire's performance was outstanding. And you know the one scene, Bob? Where she when she slipped the key, and then she walks away, and the look on her face.
Right.
Now that was acting.
Yeah, this is one of the best performances in the entire series. I have a question for you. I know you always like to throw questions at Kitty every time you call to try to throw her. And I know how much you love Never Wave Goodbye, but be serious. Isn't this one better than that one?
No, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. This one ranks number three. Never Wave Goodbye, number one. Escape into Black, number two.
Yeah.
And Nightmare at North Oak, number three.
Okay. Well, I just, you know.
What about you, Kitty? What do you think?
Some people say that it's the best. I used to actually think that this was the best one. That was my opinion for many years, except that, you know, I started to look at Never Wave Goodbye in a different light. Of course, after meeting you, it convinced me completely. Because if you're that dedicated to it, I must be a fool. I can't simply ignore that. I have a very tough time assigning any particular episode to be the best. I don't think you can do that in this series, because every one of the classic ones that we know by heart, even though the dialogue in some of them, certainly each one brings something different to the table. Whether one is about Chase, whether one is about a love story, everyone is different, so I don't think that when we get to the end of the series, we have a very tough time picking one to be at the top. I don't even know that it's fair to do that, but Escape into Black is great. Yeah, we'll get to that eventually, and that is one of the... Nancy Wickwire's performance is great, and the other great female performance in the series comes in Escape into Black. That's the other great, in my opinion, the other great female performance in the series. So I have no problem with the people who say that this is the best of the series, but, you know, Never Wave Goodbye is a more developed story. Now, for me personally, you know, it's Landscape of Running Figures.
Oh. All right, Ken, thanks a lot for calling. You're going to keep listening to see it win the DVD player tonight?
Yes, I will.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. For those of you tuned in a little late, the first clue in the acronym during this half hour was the letter T, like talk. There'll be two more coming up in the Perfectly Frank show to follow. Real quick, you guys decided what the next one you're
going to talk about? Yeah, we're going to be talking about Richard Kimball's remarkable ability to change lives. He can heal the sick and raise the dead. It's amazing. To be touched by Richard Kimball is a special experience. In fact, it's calling it Touched by a Fugitive.
All right, Touched by a Fugitive. I like that. Very original. Stay tuned for Perfectly Frank. Tonight, some bloopers and fun stuff on talk and television with Dave White. And be back in 2 weeks when we talk Fugitive again on Sherevision Radio.